Heritage Health presents Community Health Radio. From the issues affecting your health to the care centers providing solutions, this is the podcast focused on building healthier communities. This is Community Health Radio, hosted by Will Eisenbrand. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Community Health Radio. I'm your host, Will Eisenbrand, and today we're going to be talking to Deborah Marigopoulos, who is also known as the Hormone Queen, and she has just an absolutely fantastic, inspirational story for us, talking about hormones and gender assignment. And it's a special story for us. It's a special topic here. I want to make sure that we give it plenty of time. So let's get right into it. Let's get Deborah on the phone. Let's talk about hormones and how they affect gender.
Deborah Marigopoulos is a family nurse practitioner specializing in neuroimmune endocrinology. She's also known as the Hormone Queen. Deborah became an expert in gender identity, hormones, and DNA after choosing to save her intersex child from conventional medicine. Deborah has been taking care of LGBT patients for over 25 years, and the LGBT community considers her a compassionate, friendly, and empathetic healthcare provider. Deborah blends the science of medicine with the art of healing to develop safe and effective bioidentical hormone therapy for gender reassignment, as well as to support her pubescent, intersex, and aging LGBT patients. Deborah, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So, neuroimmune endocrinology, that is a mouthful.
It is.
What is that specialty, and why did you choose that?
Well, that specialty means your biochemistry in your body. So neuroimmune endocrinology covers all the little chemical messengers in your body that your body makes that allows your body to talk to itself. So your brain to talk to your organs and your gut to talk to your brain. And so all that communication is neuroimmune endocrinology. So the hormones themselves, I call it all hormones because that's what we're used to, but I include neurotransmitters and immune factors like interferon and interleukin into that same grouping of hormones because they all do the same thing. They're messengers. And really the reason I got into this field was because of my intersex child. So in 1984, I gave birth to a baby that at the time I was told was an XY female, but what that meant was the child was born with ambiguous genitalia. And we were told at the time, I was about 23, fresh out of nursing school, and we were told at the time that it was easier to make a hole than a pole and to raise the child as a girl. And I felt that that wasn't quite right. And the reason was is because the child had XY chromosomes and because the child had produced quite a bit of testosterone, even though the genitalia did not form into male genitalia, the brain of this child was exposed to so much male hormone that she might be confused as a young adult and feel like it was in the wrong body. So we went against medical convention and raised our child as an intersex child, going first with the pronoun he, but naming the child a very ambiguous name and allowing it to be able to choose for itself. And throughout its life, it literally went from female-like to male-like to in-between throughout the 32 years of its life. So right now we're using the pronoun they, although I slip a lot because for the first 28 years, We were using the pronoun he. So because I needed to help my child, I had to learn neuroimmune endocrinology quickly because the idea in medicine at the time is that your gender is based on your genitalia rather than on your chromosomes and your hormonal production. And I just didn't believe that was correct. So I had to learn as much as I could to prove my theory and help my child, through the medical system. And I found out probably 8 years, 9 years after Jairus was born, that my theory was correct, they were previously following a psychiatrist who had been reporting on twin baby boys that were circumcised at the age of two, and one of them had a circumcision accident where they ended up damaging the child's penis, so they castrated that baby and raised it as a girl. Now, later on, and the whole time the psychiatrist was saying, this child is doing well, it's quite obviously genitalia dictates gender, so this child's doing fine. Well, by the early 90s, that child was a young adult and had committed suicide. It was not doing fine. It felt like it was in the wrong body the whole time. So the idea that your genitalia actually dictates who you believe yourself to be in terms of gender is false.
Wow. That's an incredible story there. As a parent and as a healthcare provider, how has having an intersex child kind of changed your views towards both roles?
Well, I guess as a parent, I had to really decide what was male and female roles, because we were being told by the medical community that if we were going to choose the male gender for this child, if we were going to use the pronoun he, we better give really, really strong male roles. Well, while my husband was a police officer and I was a nurse, my husband did all the cooking. He liked to clean. He did very not male things back in the 80s, and I was a leader of my whole nurse practitioner association. I basically had the more leadership, stronger role. So we decided, you know, this is who we are, and this child is going to be able to decide what it wants to be and what male is and what female is, and it's a continuum. It's not black and white, and allow it to decide what it wanted to be. So I would say for the first 7 years of Jairus's life, he tended more towards more female-type gender identification, developed very, very, very much like a little girl would, in the sense was very verbal very early, read very early, wasn't as physical as early as most little boys are, and didn't really start identifying more as a little boy until he was in elementary school. And then by the time he reached college, his identity sort of switched into, what really am I? Am I a boy or a girl? And because we had this open dialogue all of his life, and there was lots of ways to be male and female, and there's lots of ways to have families, and exposed him to gay couples and lesbian couples and people who adopted, because, you know, he probably wasn't going to be able to have children. And so we had all kinds of exposures for this child that by the time he reached college age, he identified with pretty much all groups. And when you spoke to this child, now this is a young adult at this point, traveling via train from San Francisco back home to Ojai, California, and he'd be talking about some acquaintance he met on the train, and darn it, we couldn't figure out what it was. Was it a male or female, or even what the age of that person was, because he didn't identify with his own gender, he didn't really genderize anyone else. So it was almost like he was talking to someone's soul. You could not tell who this person was when he would talk about this person. It was just so, it was so interesting, his perspective on life. So, and you can hear me slipping because I'm not comfortable with the they pronoun quite yet.
I imagine that it's a
tough one. As a healthcare provider, though, it opened up my world. And I believe we're given what we need to be given in order to affect the change in the world that we're meant to affect. So I was given the opportunity to be the parent of an intersex child and sort of break through during a time where we didn't even use that terminology, a whole different world of parenting a child based on gender identity. I mean, now it's very common. We talk about transgender children, and we use the term intersexuality, but maybe it's not common in most worlds, but it's all over the social media right now. But it was not common in the early 80s and 90s. We didn't really discuss any of this. So I was breaking up new doorways, and because we wanted to have this very open gender identification for Jairus, it opened up the doorways for patients of mine to walk in and feel very comfortable with me because I was comfortable with them. And so we had very open conversations. I had many transgender people before they went through gender reassignment open up to me, even in a very medical, very conventional medical situation when I was working urgent care and in a gynecological practice, because I was so open to the fact that their genitalia didn't determine their gender. And we would discuss what options they had, and I would try to find the best treatments for them. And then I finally left conventional medicine and went out on my own and started practicing more intuitive, integrative health. And it just opened a whole doorway of being able to help these people through their transitioning, help them psychologically and spiritually and physically be able to thrive in their life, in their environments, in their families. I work with families, not just the individual, although, you know, however they want to come in is fine. And I've developed some novel therapies to be able to help to transition people who want to go through sexual reassignment. That's a lot safer because I take a holistic approach. I'm not just looking at their sex steroids. I'm looking at their entire being. And so I take a very holistic approach to treating them. So it was a blessing to have an intersex child.
That's great. You know, you mentioned in there how it's become much more visible on social media, in the news. We're hearing stories back and forth, stuff like that. But I feel like sometimes the information gets lost in translation. What are some of the myths that you come across when you're talking about this story, when you're dealing with people in a medical setting? What are some of the myths that come up around either gender reassignment or intersex children that you'd like to kind of dispel?
Well, I guess some of the myths, or maybe some of the beliefs out there that are not true, is first, you know, the first one, that your genitalia determines your gender identity. Okay, that's definitely a myth. Just because you're born with a certain genitalia, that doesn't mean that your identity, personality, and brain function equates to that genitalia. Also, there's lots of different ways that people are born, so that they're, how can I say this? The way their messengers work in their body doesn't necessarily turn on a very distinct maleness or femaleness. And that's something sort of unknown in medicine. We don't really look at it. We can't really measure receptor sites. We can't really look at it, even if it's floating in your blood. It's almost like, for me, it's like vet medicine. I'm looking more at the way the person is acting and the way their body is responding to those hormones to determine how it's affecting their identity, and when they feel out of sync with what they see between their legs and how they feel inside their heart and mind. So that's a huge piece. And I think that, you know, we have issues. I just watched a film this morning about the fact that, you know, we don't allow men to emote very easily. We don't let little boys cry. And that whole aspect of saying that being emotional makes you less manly is a myth. You know, all humans have emotions. And to express them is actually healthier. So I think by bringing this out into the forefront, we're able to affect not just those in the LGBT, and you also have, you're missing a Q and an I, so you've got the queer gender identity, meaning they'll go either way, and the B's, the bisexuals, you got in there, but you're missing the I, the intersex, so there's a whole bunch more letters they're using now. But it allows those people to realize that, you know, they can pretty much be whoever they want to be, and it doesn't really matter what their gender is. They can be an effective, whatever their professional role is, they can be an effective parent, they can be an effective and contributing member to society, that their gender role really isn't determinant of their success in life.
I like that message. I think that's a great way to kind of transition into the book that you have out now. It's called Hormones in Harmony. What inspired the book, and what can people find when they read it?
Well, what inspired the book is I meant to write it forever after I had Jairus, and thought I just really need to tell more people about how this is, you know, what's happening. I had to wait till he was old enough to say, give me permission, like, okay, Mom, you can tell our story. So it was a little bit, but what really inspired it is that my colleagues and my patients were begging me to just put it out there in writing what the secret was to optimal health. What did I see was that secret? And I really felt, and my whole practice is based on that, if there's miscommunication within your body, that you're not going to be healthy. And if you improve the communication, you actually express more optimal genetics, meaning you actually are using the best of your DNA. So Hormones in Harmony is based on the fact that I believe hormones sing and your DNA dances, and the maestro of the whole system is the hypothalamus, which is completely ignored by medicine. It's in the middle of the brain, and if we actually affect that, if we feed it what it needs, it'll actually fix the whole orchestra. The reason for writing it now and not writing it 20 years ago is my mother passed away last year, and she was a huge force for me to be able to be available for my child. She was all 4 foot ten of her was the one who stood up to the pediatric endocrinologist at UCLA and said, you know what, we're going to support whatever Deborah feels is right. I don't think that you know what's right for her child. So she was my biggest fan, my support. She ran all my businesses for 18 years. And when she got sick with a terminal cancer, I was walking her through our property, and she said to me, you know, my disease is going to change the way you practice, and you're finally going to go out in the world. And sure enough, the day she died, everything just started happening. I got a publisher. I mean, just doorways started just opening, and like she was pulling strings in heaven. So I sat down and took 35 days and wrote the whole book, and I felt like she was whispering in my ear, reminding me of all we had been through. So my inspiration was my child and my mother.
Wow, that's great. Now, where can people find Hormones in Harmony?
They can find Hormones in Harmony. It's on Amazon. They can also find it on my website, thehormonequeen.com. And I also have some offer free gifts on my website, so if they want some more information, it's all there. And I'm happy to answer any questions, and my email's there, so they can contact me with whatever their questions are. I have a really active blog and lots of information on there.
That's great. Now, one question. We'll wrap it up with this. You had the advantage, maybe the disadvantage, of having medical training prior to the birth of your child. For those mothers and those fathers that maybe don't have the background, don't have the training, and are in this situation that are having to make a decision, what advice do you have for them?
First of all, you have access to the Internet, which means you can do some research. You're not alone. We're now connected. So there are much more information about making decisions for your intersex child and or transgender child. There are more support groups out there. And I believe you need to educate yourself. What medicine is offering you is the best they know at the time. They cannot look into the future. You as a parent have to follow your gut instinct and do what's right for you and your child. And that's really what I followed. It wasn't my medical training. It was my intuition. And it's never been wrong.
Deborah, thank you so much for being on with us today.
Thank you.
Well, that was Deborah, and I really want to thank her for coming on and sharing such a deeply personal story with us and the choices that she had to make, and how it's turned out for her, because I think a lot of parents in that same situation might not have made the same choices that she did. So it's a good lesson for all of us to trust our guts as parents, do what we think is right, and hopefully those choices will pan out in the future. But trusting our gut is always a better bet. You know, I think that any conversation when we talk about LGBT community, or we talk about intersex or hormones, I don't think that conversation is complete unless we talk about tolerance. And I want to make sure that that's brought in as well. You know, we need to find tolerance in our society. And we need to look at this as, humans being human and treating everybody with respect and treating everybody equally. We're dealing with enough issues in our society that we don't need to add this to it. Tolerance is definitely the way to go. And I hope that seeing, the conversation we had with Deborah, the stories that she had, the work that she's been doing, maybe we can find ways to incorporate tolerance into our everyday lives to reach out and help rather than reach out and hurt. And that's really what I hope we've been able to accomplish with Community Health Radio over, the last few months we've been doing this, is to open our eyes to different types of situations, different things, build tolerance, and find ways that we can be helpful to our community, helpful to others. I really want to thank all of the guests that we've had on. They've been special. They've been helped to make this a special experience for me. And I also want to thank all our listeners, all of our subscribers, all the people that have tuned in week after week after week, made this such a great podcast, made things going so well for us. You can find all of our previous episodes on iTunes. You can find them on Google Play, and you can also find them right here on the website, myheritagehealth.org. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk again soon.